भद्रं कर्णे विश्वनियामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षधीर्यचत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः सुष्ठुवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यशेम देवहितं यतायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Okay, so we are on the last verse of the Vaitithya Prakarana, of the second chapter. And so we'll finish that today. Verse 38.
Tattvam adhyatmikam drishtva tattvam drishtva tu bahyatah tattvam drishtva tu bahyatah tattvibhutastadaramah tattvad aprichito bhavet tattvad aprichito bhavet
tattvam adhyatmikam drishtva tattvam drishtva tu bahyatah tattvibhutah tadaramah tattvat aprachitah bhavet. So this last verse of this chapter is really talking about what is the pala, what is the result, what do you get out of the Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, what do you get out of having exposed yourself to this teaching, having contemplated upon it, having thought it over, having contemplated on the Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, in terms of this chapter, right? Because now Gaudapada is... it's just summing up this Vaitithya Prakarana. Vaitithya Prakarana means this section that's dealing with the mityatva of the creation. The mityatva of the creation means how all of this creation, everything that exists within duality, kind of like a dream, and the dream comes, that's the duality, has come, space, air, fire, water, earth, right? Time and space and all of the elements and everybody in it, all of the people in it, all of the animals in it, all of the trees, all of the vegetation, the whole scenario. And so when we talk about the earth, this creation, we mean not just the earth, we mean the whole cosmos that includes space and time and change and the subject-object relationships. It's not as though we are not part of this manifest duality. Just like when you have a dream, the dream characters are part of that manifest duality, of that manifest creation. So it's not just the creation and I'm outside of it. I'm totally inside of it. And so this body, mind, sense organs, which makes up from just on the grossest level, this is the subject and you are all objects. Okay? I'm the subject, you are my objects. Subject, object. Of course, I'm an object to you. Right? But as we try to understand what we really mean by the whole creation, that's why the dream illustration is so helpful. Because actually, if you think in the dream bodies are part of the creation. Right? The dream sense organs are part of the creation. The dream thoughts are part of the creation. The dream mind is part of the creation. The dream emotions are part of the dream creation. It's all part and parcel of one manifest duality. And so that means that part of the manifest duality, when we think of the dream, includes the subject and the object, the knower and the knower, the knower and the known. Right? If I'm a dream character walking around in the dream, using my sense organs, having my feelings, thinking my thoughts, all of that which I consider to be the, belong to the subject, really is part and parcel of the whole dream. Right? So there's not a dream character outside of the dream that enters in. The dream characters in the dream are part of the warp and woof of the whole dream. And like that, in this creation, everything here, including my body, my mind, my sense organs, my moods, my emotions, even the person walking around says, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, the ahankara. All, everything that makes me me, as far as I'm concerned, right, belongs to the creation, is of the same order of reality as the creation. It itself is this body, mind, sense organs, even though from my standpoint, I'm the knower and you're the known. But from maybe a deeper standpoint, this body, mind, sense organs is as known as the objects which are known through my sense organs. Understand what I mean? It's like if you have a dream, the dream character that you're identified with in the dream is known to you, right? As well as all of the dream objects. So on that level, this body, mind, sense organs person here is an object as much as everything that I perceive through my sense organs. Mm-hmm. It is part objectified as part of the creation. So whatever can be objectified by me belongs to the creation. Whatever can be objectified. And since my sense organs can be objectified by my body can be objectified by my sense organs, that's how I know my body, really, this body belongs to the creation. Because my mind can objectify my sense organs, I know if my eyes are working or if I can hear. And I also know that if my mind is daydreaming, my sense organs aren't known to me. My daydream is known. Okay? So the sense organs themselves are objectified. I'm aware of them. My thoughts are objectified because I can sit here and tell you exactly what I'm thinking, or I decide not to tell you. I'm aware of what I'm thinking. I'm aware of what I'm feeling. You know, the type of meditation is to always just sit here and be aware of the thoughts that are passing through. Be aware of the feelings that are passing through. Be aware of the multi-processing, all the tasking that your mind is doing. Just sit there and watch it. So those are also objectified. This is objectified. This is objectified. My body is objectified. My sense organs are objectified. Known. This is known. This is known. You are all known. The body is known. Clothes are known. Sense organs are known. Right? Moods are known. Emotions are known. Thoughts are known. So there's a subject-object relationship that usually I have stops right here. I'm the subject, you're the object. Actually, this body, mind, sense organs, all of these things are the object. They're all objectified. So easy to understand if you think of the dream. All objectified. So easy to understand if you have a daydream, an imagination. Everything, subject and object, person, and person's experience, you know, body, mind, sense organs, and the experience, all objectified. They all belong to the creation. All that is objectifiable, all of that exists within time. Anything objectifiable, it exists within time. If it exists within time, which it does, okay, exists within space, it exists within time, it's subject to change. That's what it means. For something to exist within time means it's subject to change. Time and change go together. If it's subject to change, it's subject to coming and going, and it's objectifiable, now there's something that's extraordinarily important for us to recognize. And that is this, we were doing a little bit with the meditation today, is to be able to differentiate those things that are coming and going in my experience, coming and going, leaving, to be able to differentiate those things from me, because I'm not coming and going. I'm the one who is always present. The me is the one that is the stable person, the stable one, that is there no matter what the experience is. Now, one reason this very common meditation, at least in the East, in so many of the different spiritual disciplines, including Vedanta, is just to be able to sit and just to quietly sit, to relax, and to become aware of the experiences that are coming into being and going out of being. A thought, a perception, a mood, an emotion, an imagination. They present and they leave. They present and they leave. They present and they leave. Leave who? Who are they leaving? Because you don't leave. In fact, you can even make a commentary, I had this thought, I had this thought, I had this feeling, I had this feeling. All of this was while I was meditating, all these things were passing through. But there's somebody that's not passing through. I am always there. Always there, always the same. Now, if that's the case, if I can make that discernment, remember I mentioned in the meditation that we can always easily and always do discern one thought from another thought, one mood from another mood. That discernment we make all the time. How I'm feeling today as opposed to how I was feeling yesterday, or how I'm feeling this moment versus last moment. This type of differentiation based upon one experience being differentiated from another, we do that continually. What we don't do is differentiate my own presence from the experiences that are all passing through. There is somebody here who does not leave. We don't usually make that viveka. The one who doesn't leave, who doesn't change. What are you? That is you. That's not an objectifiable experience. That's the conscious being, which is me, the self-evident conscious being, kind of the bottom line. It's not an experience as an objectifiable experience. I am known to myself not in terms of subject-object relationship, but just in terms of conscious being. Conscious being is self-evident. I am self-evident. It's like I'm the shining light because of which everything else is illumined. And the shining light doesn't have to illumine itself. It doesn't have to bring in another luminary. I don't need to bring in another luminary, another consciousness, in order for me to be self-effulgent. Because I'm consciousness, I know myself, not with any type of duality, just because I'm self-shining. And I'm the bottom line. You can't get behind that. Everything else is as though in front of that. You can't get behind it. What's going to be behind it? And so this what we call pratyagatma, we say, you're being that innermost being. Innermost being, it means I can't get behind it. Behind it means I can objectify all my thoughts. I can change my thoughts. I'm as though behind my thoughts. Yeah. I'm interior to my thoughts, as though, from the standpoint of the thoughts. Interior to my perception, interior to my body. But how can I get interior to me, to the conscious being that I am? I can't get behind that. But now the thing is, we have to recognize it. We usually never even think about it. This viveka, this discrimination, is not there. And because it's not there, and if it's not there, I actually have no home. There is no stable person. The mind isn't stable. Nobody's mind is stable. If it were stable, it wouldn't be the mind. The mind is meant to think, to change continually. You know? So what if you haven't recognized the me that is that presence, the changeless presence of myself that illumines that mind, is the very being of that mind. The changeless being, my changeless presence that is always there no matter what the thought is, no matter what the emotion is. What if I don't recognize myself? What if I only know myself through the lens of my thoughts? Because whenever a thought is there, whatever the thought is, or whatever the emotion is, I am there. It's my thought. I am always there. But what if my mind only knows me from the standpoint of itself? What that would mean, and does mean, is when the mind is sad, there's a sad thought, sad emotion, then I am sad, because the mind is only relating to me from its own, through its own lens. I am now sad. I am now happy. I am now agitated. I am now hurt. I am now in a good mood. Whatever the mood of the mind is, that's who I am, because I'm only relating to myself through its lens, rather than relating to myself as myself, which illumines it. It just, if we look at the sun, the example of the sun in three water buckets, you know, the sun is illumining the muddy water bucket and a clear water bucket, an agitated water bucket, a clear water bucket. From the standpoint of the sun is shining its light, right, on whatever the condition of the water is. It's reflected as though in that water. So the muddy water bucket, now the sun has become muddy. Has the sun become muddy? Or the reflection has become muddy. Nothing's happened to the sun. Clear water bucket, sun is now bright and happy. The sun has become bright and happy. Agitated water bucket, the agitated sun reflection, sun's become agitated. You know, it's all from the standpoint of the water. Now here, there's not a distance, the sun up there and the water bucket's down here. Here there's no distance. But the concept is the same. I'm actually illumining whatever the condition is. I'm the conscious being who illumines, who lights up, who is the very being, the one, the light of all of these changing experiences. I don't change. The experiences change, but I need to notice that. Otherwise, I only experience myself through the condition of the thought. Like experiencing the sun through the condition of the reflection, as though. See what I mean? And then I have no self, basically. It's a very tenuous situation. Very tenuous, because of the spectrum of possibilities the mind has to offer me, I only like half of them. I like the positive half. I like the positive emotions. The emotions that have shone, the peaceful emotions, the loving emotions, caring emotions, joyous, beautiful, happy emotions, that whole spectrum. I love that, and I feel good. But then there's the other side, you know, the agitated, irritated, angry, depressed, jealous, hateful, rageful, violent, dark, depressed. Okay? I don't like any of these. Okay? And so the pendulum of the mind is taking me through, you know, quite a ride. And I'm happy, unhappy. Happy, unhappy. And that's who I am. I remember when I was young, teenager, my mind, I would be fine one moment, just be walking along, everything fine. Something would happen. Who knows what it was? Something would happen that would trigger me, and I would be hurt, or I would be angry, or some emotion. Some emotion would be triggered by something. And I used to be afraid of this. Because I don't know what is going to trigger and when. When is it going to trigger? You know? And then it triggers. And then if it's a reaction of some sort, it doesn't just go away. You can't say, go.
Dismissed.
did go now, it's embodied, and you're stuck with it. And you're stuck with it. We are always experiencing ourselves only from, you know, this very, actually very elusive and illusory, in a sense, these illusory states of experience. And the reason I say illusory is twofold. One is that whatever the experience is, it's nearly not happening to me. My being is fine. If I notice that, my being is absolutely fine. Another thing is that the experience comes and goes. It has a beginning, it's present, and it goes. So where was it before, and where is it when it goes? It's an experience I have for the moment in the middle. Now, what is it like to recognize this? This is what this last verse is about. What does it mean when I recognize what we call this mitya? Mitya means that that's the order of reality of these experiences. They have no independent being of their own. When they are here, they enjoy me. They enjoy my being, my isness, my amness, my consciousness. And when they pass away, they're gone. They don't enjoy anything. They're gone. The conscious being remains. All experiences are dependent on me. When they are here, they enjoy conscious being. Even, like, say, to make clear what I mean, I think it's obvious in terms of, like, an emotion, for instance, or a thought. The emotion comes, and now the emotion enjoys me, conscious being. The emotion goes, another emotion comes. Now that new emotion enjoys me, conscious being. Okay? So that's why I can say, oh, sad emotion has come. I, the conscious being, am sad. Sad emotion goes, I, the conscious being, am no longer sad. Happy emotion comes, I, the conscious being, am now happy. What we don't realize is that I, the conscious being, is not coming and going. We have to differentiate. We have to recognize the me that's not coming and going and doesn't really enjoy any of these qualities at all. Doesn't enjoy the qualities that are coming and going because I can be without them. So then I need to know, all right, what am I like? Who is the one? What am I like? Not the sad thought that comes and goes, not the happy thought that comes and goes, not the perception that comes and goes. What am I like? The me that is always here. When I start to differentiate that and recognize myself, I actually become free. Because this self, unless in the recognition of yourself, that your own nature, you were to go, oh no, how disappointing. The one who's always here. The one who's always here is exactly what I would never want to be. That would be horrible. But that actually isn't that isn't your nature at all. In fact, the one that you are is the one that you love. The one that is the most dear, priyam, it's the one that is here, that is you, is the one that is most dear. It's the one that you do everything for, in fact. You know, the one that you don't want to die. And you don't mind the negative emotions dying. They can all go. But your own being is the most dear. And I don't have to tell you that. That's something that you recognize. When you just sit with the one who's always there, not some bliss vritti, not some bliss experience, not a negative experience, not a neutral experience, just your own being. Your own being that the Upanishads say is ananda, is wholeness, is fullness, is so stable, is so strong, is so beloved. It's recognizing you in your own form, in your own nature, stripped of all of these mitya experiences that are coming and going. When I recognize my being amidst all of this, the stability of my being amidst all of this, there's a huge pulla in that. There's a huge gift. There's moksha, there's liberation in that recognition, the recognition of yourself amidst all of the time and space and everything that exists in time. Think about anything that exists in time comes into being and goes out of being. That's what it means for it to exist in time. It comes into being and goes out of being. What else? That's just a way of defining change, right? Something comes into being, it's born, it's there, and it goes away. That's the nature of change. Anything that comes into being and goes out of being doesn't really have being in the middle. It doesn't have being in the middle because it had a prior non-existence, it had no being, and it has a posterior non-existence, no being. Then why do you say it has being in the middle? It can't. Nothing can come from nothing. That's what it amounts to. So we have to, these things that are coming into and out of being, we have to recognize the being that's not coming into and out of being. Being doesn't come into and out of being. Things come into being and out of being, but being doesn't come into and out of being. I am the being. My being doesn't come into being and go out of being. I simply am. So what is my nature? The nature of me. This isn't, when I said it's not a spiritual experience, you have to say, what I mean by that is this is not some, we don't have to crank up some sort of meditative state in order to discover yourself. As though yourself is to be reached by a meditative state somewhere out there. Rather, it's a viveka, a discrimination of your own presence amidst this mitya, these things that are coming and going. Your presence already is here. There's nowhere to go. There's no new state. There's no state to reach. The state is already here. You couldn't be more here. That's not a state to reach. It's a viveka. It's a discrimination between all these things that are coming and going and you, the one who is constantly present. That, in fact, is the most spiritual, the most beautiful, most wonderful experience. But the thing is, it's not experience to be gained. It's an experience to be recognized. I need to be recognized. I'm already here. And I do recognize myself, but only through the lens of these experiences. Through the conditions of my mind, through the conditions of my sense organs, through the conditions of my body, not from the condition of me, the me that is ever present. And so what is it like for when this mitya, this world of change has been differentiated from me? Satya mitya. So he says, this is what he says, the truth, the tattvam means that which is satyam, that which actually is, the nature of the atma, the nature of yourself. The tattva, the satyam means that which actually exists, which has being. The tattva is the being that is free of time. We don't say it's true. We don't say, and this is all to understand by definition, really. We don't say that something is satyam, or true, or tattva, or real, if it comes into being and goes out of being. That's not a definition of something true. Because it can't, we would say it's not real. It doesn't have any real existence because it's bordered by non-existence. So anything bordered by non-existence can't have existence in the middle. And this is very simple. The idea here of non-existence is just simply this. It's non-existent, it's non-existent, it's not there. It doesn't exist, period, it's not there. So from zero, what is absolutely not there, nothing can come from that. Why? Well, because it's not there. It's not a trick. It's not tricky. It's not there. It doesn't exist. And so nothing can come from it. And so, but here we have in this whole universe, everything coming into being and going out of being. Not there on either side. And so we say, whatever you're experiencing is dependent for its being on something else. Clay pot example, the pot, right, the pot has no being of its own. It's dependent on the clay. If I remove the clay, there's no pot. Right? And so if I took a pot and I squashed it into a plate, the pot is no longer. It no longer is. I have a lump of clay. There's no pot. I make it into a pot. There we have a pot is born. Squash the pot into a plate. The pot is gone. And so we say that that pot, which we experience, is mithya because it has no being of its own. The clay is there first in the form of the ball, then in the form of the pot, then in the form of the plate. Then I could make it back into a ball or into a lump. Nothing's happening to the clay. But these names and forms are there. We're experiencing them, but they have no reality apart from the clay. What is actually there is clay. The pot, the plate, the rough-edged ball, are what we call mithya. They don't have any being apart from the clay. So that's one example that we use to really understand mithya. Another example uses rope snake. If a rope is mistaken for a snake, the snake is mithya. It has no being of its own. The rope is what is real. That's mithya. Satyam is the rope. So here, what happens when, for us, when we recognize that everything that exists within duality, you know, is mithya. To recognize all of this as mithya means we have to recognize what is satyam, what is actually here. And what is actually here is what is not subject to change. If it's subject to change, it's mithya. Immediately, because it's bordered by non-existence. The only thing, anything that exists within time, anything that I can look at, anything I can objectify that exists within time and space, mithya, subject to change. I am the only thing that is not objectifiable. I can't objectify consciousness. Let me look at the consciousness. I can't objectify existence. Let me look at the existence. I can look at names and forms, but the being itself is non-objectifiable. Conscious being, consciousness which is being, which is me. This isn't objectifiable. It's not an object. And so here it says, having seen what is satyam, this truth, adhyatmikam, from the standpoint of my being, of myself, adhyatmikam, from the standpoint of the jiva, the body, mind, sense organs, having recognized my being, drishtva means having seen it, having recognized it, this tattva, this the conscious being, from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, and tetvam drishtva bahyataha, and having recognized that tetva, that satyam, that truth, externally also. So that's big. If I think that the atma, the truth, is only my being, which is like a little pea in a pod inside the body, mind, sense organs, you know, then I don't understand. There's more to be understood. Because, you know, this body, mind, sense organs, this whole thing, is objectifiable and belongs to the creation, like the dream. You think of the dream, the whole dream comes, and part of the dream is the body, mind, sense organs, that all the different bodies are there, and the one you may be identified with. All those are part of the dream. So the conscious being that the little dream character enjoys, right, is not an object in the dream. You see that? If you have a dream, the whole dream comes, there's characters in the dream, all of the characters, and say you're identified with one, your little mumukshu, the little one who wants liberation. You're identified with one of them. You now recognize your being, the conscious being that you are, from the standpoint of the body-mind-sense organs. But then you have to realize that this body-mind-sense organs is part of the whole dream. And the conscious being that you are is not an object in that dream. And so what makes the conscious being, what gives size or shape or dimension or limitation to the conscious being that you are? In fact, the whole dream enjoys the conscious being that you are. It's just like now, if I ask you to have an imagination of a meadow and put some people in it and walk around in it, you have this imagination. Okay, have an imagination of a meadow with people. You are the conscious being of the whole meadow, right? And everybody in it. So now, how is the conscious being that you are, what's going to divide you if you're not an object? If you're not mitya, if you're not an object within duality, what's going to divide you? So now what happens is when I recognize myself, the satchit, the conscious being that I am, differentiating from the body, mind, sense organs, I can also notice the conscious being that I am in relation to bahyataha, everything that is out here. It's like this. If you have a daydream, you know, you're just, you might be having one right now.
You can't tell.
Chomji always makes when you can tell. This is what a student looks like when you're having a daydream.
Mm-hmm. You can tell.
I like that. Oops, what was just happening? But listen, when you're having a daydream or an imagination, the whole thing is known. You may, as a character in the daydream, be experiencing the daydream through your character sense organs. Your little character in the daydream, right? So you're doing something in the daydream. But actually, that whole daydream is known. The whole daydream, everything in it, it is. Across the board. Even right now, as you're looking at this in this room, with your eyes, you're experiencing this room. There's all these different names and forms, people, etc. It's whatever your eyes are seeing. But all of them is. All of them enjoy being. This body enjoys being. These sense organs enjoy being. The mind enjoys being. The wall enjoys being. The table enjoys being. There is nothing that doesn't enjoy being. That being is not an object. You can't look at, oh, look at the being. No. But everything enjoys being equally. And everything equally enjoys knownness. Knownness is consciousness. This is known, 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 the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the thoughts is known, I am known. The knownness is just another name for consciousness. There is no experience that doesn't equally enjoy being and consciousness. We just use knownness. I'll talk about call the mind the knower and everything else known, but actually, I say I'm the knower, or this mind sense organs are the knower. Okay, but they're also known. They're knower as an instrument within duality. But they are known. I'm aware of my eyes. I'm aware of my mind. I'm aware of my emotions. All of them are known. I'm aware of myself. Myself is self-evident. So all experience enjoys self-evident me. I don't think of it like that until I know. And then I recognize this is all really enjoying, just like the pot enjoys the clay, totally. All of this enjoys me, totally. I'm the Sat-Chit. I'm the existent conscious being which everything equally enjoys, as long as it's here. And I said, as long as it's here, that means it's mitya, because it's going to be bordered by non-existence. And so that's the Advaita. So he says, having seen the tattva, the reality, the my own being, from the standpoint of the individual, me, Adhyatmika, and Bahita, having seen it all, also from the standpoint of externally, where I realize all of this really, all of this, all beings, all jivas, all individuals, all animals, all plants, the whole universe has me, this very personal me, is the very personal one me that all beings enjoy. The very personal one me that the whole universe enjoys. That this me is Brahman. This me is infinite. It's the very self of Ishwara, of the whole. So having seen from both Adhyatmika, the individual, and Bahyataha, from the Bahya externally, then what? Having seen that, Tatvi Bhutaha, I have become that. I am that. It's not that I see it and then it's somebody else. I see my own being. I am that tattva. I am that satyam. I am that truth. Tatvi Bhutaha. And Tad Aramaha. And then I revel in that. Aramaha. Because the truth of everything really is my own being, and that being is Ananda. Ananda means I have discovered what I've always sought from the world. In the very nature of myself, the very truth of this whole universe is what I've always sought from the world. I say, what do I seek from the world? I want to be whole. I want to be happy. I want to be full. I want to be complete. I want to say, all is well with me. That is my very swarupa. That's my very nature. I discover that in a way that makes me absolutely free, because that what I've discovered is not an experience that comes and goes. It's the very nature of myself. So Tad Aramaha. And then Tat Twat Aprachutaha. And for me, there is no variation from that truth. I can never go away from it. I can never go away from it. This is something that's so important, because we can think and do think until we understand differently. That when my mind is happy, say like when I fulfill a desire, or when I do some yoga, some pranayama, some meditative exercises to get an absorbed mind, or I fulfill a desire, I get an absorbed mind then, because for that moment I'm desireless, you know. So I will think that when I have that absorbed mind, then I'm with myself. But when the mind is doing this or doing that, then I've lost myself again. Or when I'm engaged with my body, I'm hungry or I'm tired or I have to do something. Oh, now I'm identified with the body and the self has been lost again. All this type of thinking. That never happens. That never happens. For somebody who knows you, if you know yourself, that does not happen. Because yourself doesn't come and go. It's like the sun doesn't become muddy and agitated and then quiet. The sun's always the same. You are always the same. It really does not matter what thought you're having. Either this thought is like this, this thought is like this, this mood is like this, this emotion is like this, this situation is like this. But am I like that? Am I taking on all of the gunas, all of the qualities of this mitya? And for one who, when you know yourself, you're not. You're having this kind of a thought, but your being is always the same. It's always the same. And it's never covered, just like the sun is never covered, you are never covered. And because your own nature is so full, you are full and beautiful by nature, which is just something you have to recognize. It's kind of shocking. That you are the one that you love the most. Your very swarupa, your very nature is the one that you love the most. Your mind revels in your own being, because it's discovered the source of what it's always been running around looking for. And so once you discover that source, then you like to stay there, because that's what you've always wanted, is that beautiful wholeness. And so the mind experiences the world, but enjoys from home. It has a home. And so, and that home never varies, it never wavers. Because you never waver, then there's never any, can't go away from what doesn't waver. Right? You don't waver. And so the thoughts waver. Moods waver. The world wavers. Because that's their nature. But you don't. And nothing can make you either. And you can't have a thought or an experience without you. You don't waver. The experience, all the experiences are continually changing. That's just their nature. But you are steady. And so amidst all of this kaleidoscope of a world that we experience, including your body, your mind, experience, the whole show, your being is always the same. It's aparicittaha. And so you don't have to worry about meditating or not meditating or doing this or not doing this. You don't have to worry about that. You know? You can do those things. There's nothing wrong with them. You can do those things in order to discipline your mind or something like that, or to help settle your mind. You can do all of those kind of things. Pranayama, all of these things are positive and they're healthy, you know. But yourself doesn't go away for you. Yourself never goes away. It never gets dim. It's always present, completely, fully, no matter what condition the mind is in. So it's not like I'm having a deep, a depressed thought and now I'm gone. I'm not gone, ever. And I'm not covered, either. Just like the sun is never covered when it's illumining the clouds. The sun is the sun, and you are you. There's no covering. And so that is the freedom. I can let the mind be the mind. I can let the world be the world. The thing is that the quality of your mind does change. With knowledge, it does, because it's happy. It's found the source of the ananda or the fullness that it's always sought. And so its problems are over. And so it doesn't have all of these deep, you know, angst and all of these emotional problems. It doesn't. That's true. But it's kind of not the point. Because whatever thought the mind is having, whatever feeling it's having, whatever triggered by the environment, whatever is going on, that's all Ishwara, it is what it is. But I'm always the same. And the mind revels in that. The mind has that arama. It revels. Whatever it's doing, it revels in my sameness. In the self that it can't hurt. I can never be hurt. I can never be covered. I can never become depressed. I can never become anxious. I never need to become happy because I am happier than the happiest. It's a happiness that's present in sadness. I am the ananda that's even there illumining the sadness. It's an ananda that's not dependent upon a mental state. And so he says, that's the nature of a of somebody who has understood mitya, the mityatva of this. Remember, to understand the mityatva of this whole creation means to understand myself. It's like I can't understand the mityatva of the snake without knowing the rope. And I can't understand the mityatva of all of this without having recognized my being. But once my being is recognized, then all the mityatva of all of this becomes something very, very real. Nobody can take it away. Nobody can take away what is. The ignorance is gone. I am free. So now, in finishing, this finishes this Vaitetya Prakarana. The next one, having done all that, the next one is called the Advaita Prakarana. Okay. It establishes all of this as mitya. Now we're going to see how there's nothing there but me. Yeah. It's the next chapter. I'm touched up for that chapter.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, let's take a moment. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Very strange puzzle to unravel.
It does have to be unraveled because the superimposition is so much, you know, between your being and your experiences. It's thorough. Mm-hmm. And it's innate to the situation. It's not like you were at one point not suffering from that superimposition just by the very fact of being born. That's there. No problem from the standpoint of the self, but from the standpoint of the jiva, there's no reason that the mind wouldn't take itself to be the conscious being, because wherever the mind is, consciousness is. So that superimposition is, you know, built in. It's obvious once it's unsorted out. But until it's sorted out, the mind doesn't really need to think about it at all. Because what's to think about? I'm the conscious being, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. You know?
Well, also, if the mind got more satisfaction out of being a conscious being, you...
you know what? It doesn't. The reason it doesn't is because it's always trapped by desire. You know, what happens when you have a desire, you know, is that the ananda that you are is superimposed on something else. And then you run after it. And then as soon as it's superimposed on the world divides up into things that are going to help you get that object, the things that are inimical to it, and then whether or not you're going to be able to get it. So there's this kind of race to get yourself, back. Then you fulfill the desire, and then you become desireless for the moment, and everything is fine. But then it starts again, and again, and again, and again. So you fulfill these desires and have 15 seconds of peace. So it's really amazing. Because the ananda, the fullness, doesn't belong to the object. It's really hidden in the seeker. You know? And that's why when you gain moksha, when they call it liberation, it's such, the problem of the mind is actually solved. because there is no distance between the ananda, that fullness, and the mind. Wherever the mind goes, the self is. The self is the source of the ananda. And so now the mind, instead of looking out here for it in some object, it just relaxes into my being. That's all it needs to do.
So consciousness.
You used to have that relaxation take place by fulfilling a desire that you had to do all this work for and go through all this angst for. But when you fulfill the desire, your mind becomes like a clear water bucket. It's desireless. That's why things like listening to beautiful music, taking a walk in nature, being with close friend, you know, all varieties of love relationships when they're loving. Of course, they always have their shadow side, but those moments of, you know, of love, like love of a child, you know, or the love of your partner when you're loving them, as opposed to being terrible. It all brings a relaxed mind, peaceful mind. And then you feel the ananda, that like a clear water bucket reflects the sun. But you're missing being the sun, you're relying on the reflection. Where all the while your being in its own essence is present. No matter what the reflection is or what the thought is, you, your being, the conscious being that you are, its own nature, you're always present. And that nature is inviolate and so beautiful. The mind just is so used to getting lost in itself and in its own desires and mental states and all of that, it doesn't recognize the one who's ever present.
If you have to first see Satyam before you can recognize Nitya, then why does Gaudapada start with Vaitatya and then go to Advaita?
I know, I have the same question. Why did he do that? Maybe because we've already done the Upanishad. You know, and is in, so having already done the Upanishad, so the first chapter, right? Then it's a matter now of really proving. See, in the Karaka, it's about proving beyond any doubt, using logic, to prove now that this creation has no reality of its own. And so if you're convinced that this has no reality of its own, now we can concentrate on the Advaita.
Yeah.
Just say it like that.
Well, that's what's coming up, isn't it? The next chapter?
Yep.
Yeah. Good.
When we say something that is mithya, it's not to dismiss the experience. It's just giving it a certain order of reality. That's why we say, if we say something is absolutely real, satyam, what that would mean by definition is that it can never be negated. So it can't be negated in past, present, or future. So it simply is. That would be real. Satyam. Vyavaharika, there's two types of mithya. One is Vyavaharika, one is Pratibhasika. Vyavaharika means this world that we experience through our sense organs. We say this world that we experience that has an order to it, it has a shared reality, you know, that we can all agree that this is a rug, etc. But we say it is mithya because it's subject to change. And anything that's subject to change can't fulfill the definition of satyam. It must depend upon being. It doesn't have being of its own. So this whole vyavahara empirical reality that we experience through our sense organs is still mitya, because it doesn't fulfill the definition of satyam, and yet we experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So you said it's a dependent reality. Then there's pratibhasika, subjective reality, like your imagination. That's also mitya. Because when it's here, it's not that we don't experience it. It's not non-existent. We experience it. But it has a borrowed, it borrows being. It doesn't have being innate to itself.
It's not self-subsisting.
That's right. That's right. It's not self-subsisting.
It's not self what?
Subsisting. It doesn't exist in and of itself.
Mm.
It's by nature subject to change. But while it's here, it enjoys being. So, but the being it enjoys is not subject. The being that it enjoys is satyam. It doesn't come into being. Being doesn't come into being and going out of being, but everything comes into being and goes out of being. If it comes into being and goes out of being, it's mitya. Right? If it's the being which things come into and out of, that's satyam.
It's creation.
Creation is mitya.
That's the thing that's not self-subsisting.
Right. Anything that changes. But the substance, what is actually here, is satyam.
To create.
Just conscious being, the existence itself. Not the creator. The creator involves maya. That's a whole different topic. I don't think I want to open that door right now. I'm tired. I'll do it next week.
We can do that Saturday morning.
Yeah.
What's the tendency that takes the tendency of our mind to take itself to be what is passing? Is the tendency before discrimination?
The mind itself has for its being, and is never away from, what is mitya is never away from satyam, what is real. So the mind does enjoy conscious being, right? Just conscious being never changes, and the mind continually changes. But while it is here, whatever it's doing, it's enjoying conscious being. So then, enjoying conscious being, it experiences this world, which also enjoys conscious being in the form of it is, and it is known. So why shouldn't it take it to be real? You know, an example I like is when you're having a dream, when you're in the dream is real from all of those within in it, right? When you're within it, it's real. But when you wake up, that dream is gone, right? But what was there still is. That's why it's the weirdest, it's a wonderful experience. When you wake up from a dream, the whole dream has gone away. But nothing has happened. Nothing has happened because what is actually there, the conscious being that's the truth of the dream, doesn't waver at all. And so the whole dream disappears. And you recognize, oh, that dream wasn't real, or whatever you want to say about it. But when the dream was there, it was real. It appeared to be real. But when the dream wakes up, when you wake up from the dream is gone, what made the dream real is still there. That's the satyam. That's why you can say, even though this whole dream has totally disappeared, nothing has happened. It's the same to notice, it's a kind of a nice exercise to notice, just experiment having imaginations in your mind. You can imagination a meadow or the ocean or walking along through the city, whatever the imagination, doesn't matter. Notice the difference when the imagination is there and then when you pull it away. What's there? What's behind the curtain as though of the imagination? The being that the imagination enjoys, the truth that it enjoys, never wavers. And the whole imagination enjoys it. But if you can do a little exercise like that, then you can notice that what you're experiencing through your sense organs, this vyavahara, this empirical world, and this empirical world that I'm, it's a shared reality, I'm experiencing this through my sense organs, which is creating a thought modification in my mind. Right? And so this thought modification that I'm experiencing, this world that I'm experiencing, enjoys the set chit, which is my being, you know, pervasively, just like every thought modification I have. So you can start differentiating the set chit from all experience, not just your body, mind, sense organs, but from all of your perceptions also. Nothing's away from it. I think that takes a little more unfoldment for me, make that more real, but we'll do it later. Today we're done. Should we call it a night?
Yeah.